I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is part of the Podbelly Network. Please visit podbelly.com to see a complete listing of all of our other shows.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, ain't.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Pauly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 220 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Wow.
We had a big week. Say that.
I know, we had a big
week. I always say wow.
But I don't know what else to say. Bam. That really don't work for me. It's more of a Batman type thing. Well guys, I always say that too, so
yeah.
We're just stopping you before you interjected. We had a fun week. We celebrated our 13th wedding anniversary in Gatlinburg.
It was great, man. Weather was beautiful. It was just perfect.
Yep. Saw a couple of really good shows down there.
Oh, I did have one thing to say.
What?
I did get sick.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you a little advice. We went to a restaurant, and it was freezing. We had to wait outside, and so I wanted a cup of hot chocolate, which was to die for. Like, it was so delicious. Well, then I ordered hot crab dip with pita bread. I will tell you, those two do not go together, like, at all.
I think most adults would have probably figured that out ahead of time.
Well, I know, but I didn't really think about it. I don't know what the deal was, so I couldn't finish my salad. I couldn't even look at it. And we go outside to the parking lot. And I'm like, Jerry, I'm going to walk over here to this behind the bush. Oh, it was not a pretty sight. After that, it felt good, though. But yeah, it was gross. But other than that, it was a great time.
All right, before we get into the story, and we'll tell a little bit more about some of the stuff that happened as we get on, but before we get into it, obviously, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thank all of you for everything that you do in these trying times.
Yes, we appreciate you guys so much. We love you. We pray for you every day. I don't know how you keep going the way you do, to be honest. I don't know how, but you somehow muster your inner, I don't know.
Something?
Your inner superness or superhero-ness. I don't know how you all do it, but God bless you all, and we love you all so much.
Right, and also, we want to remind everybody that if you're going through a tough time, if you're struggling, if you're just needing somebody to talk to or somebody to just listen, then we're here for you. We've also got the Hillbilly Horror Stories group on Facebook that you can become a member of. 5,000 people that are just willing to give you words of encouragement when you need it. I've seen lots of examples of that, especially in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And always proud of our members for coming to the rescue of anybody who needs help.
Yeah, our group is amazing. We love you guys so much and appreciate y'all being there for everybody. And of course, if you would rather talk to someone else, you can call the 800 number at 800-273-8255, or you can text them at 741-741. And just please reach out to us. Everybody's there for you. We love you guys.
All right. And as usual, this episode is brought to you by El Yucateco Hot Sauce that is found at elyucateco.com. You can find any of their hot sauces there on their website, but you can also find most of them at most major retail grocers such as Walmart and Target, and have 7 different flavors.
They do that.
5 of which are habanero-based, and they are hashtag king of flavor.
You know, I ate the crap ton out of some scrambled eggs this weekend.
Yes, you did.
I did. And I did it. Now it's to the point where I don't want my scrambled eggs unless they have that hot sauce on them. It's like, seriously. Like, I love it. It's so delicious. And that's all I know to tell you. You just got to try it.
We went to the one pancake place, and they had another brand on the table. And Tracy just looked at it and said, that's just gross.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get used to.
You do.
You get used to El Yucateco. And, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't think that there was a big difference in hot sauces. Now, I know of the cayenne pepper sauces. There is, you know, from one brand to the other, some are definitely different because there are some that are better than the others. But mm-hmm. I guess, you know, my experiences now with the habanero is that I would rather have habanero than a cayenne pepper hot sauce.
Right.
And
I will say this too. You know, I'm diabetic and I've been really trying really hard not to eat biscuits and gravy, and it's killing my soul. But my sugar has been like off the charts lately. But I don't mind to eat a bunch of scrambled eggs or bacon or something without the bread, just because I do put that hot sauce on it. So I don't feel like I'm really missing anything. I get that great taste, and I'll look at my bread like, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, it really does help you guys. It really does. So just think about that.
All right, guys. Here's what we got for you. Now, tonight's story is going to be a little shorter than we normally do, because to be honest with you, we were out of town most of the week, and I didn't get to put the research time in for a longer story. And a lot of times when we're out of town, we just end up putting up one that we've done on Patreon, but I decided I wanted to do something completely new tonight. Mm-hmm. I do have a good story for you. It's just not as long.
Okay.
But to help make up for it, I have Nick from the Brohio podcast.
Oh, boy.
We've got about
buckle up.
We've got a very long interview that we did later. And it's not an interview. I say interview, but it's actually him telling us a bunch of the ghost stories that he has encountered when he used to work at the correctional facility.
Oh, gosh. I bet he's got a ton.
And it's like each, and I think I mentioned this either on a Patreon episode or regular, but each one of his stories, there's 3 of them, each one is better.
And it gets better as it goes.
Now, there is some language in there.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll remind you that, you know, it's probably not one for the kiddies to listen to, but these are really good stories.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, this is about a 40-minute a talk, so
okay,
it's full of good stuff in there. So you're going to have a good long episode. It's just this particular story won't be
good,
but it is interesting.
Well, we love us some Nick, so we're excited about
that. Right, and then plus I got to go to the Gates of Hell Cemetery that Tracy again chickened out on and didn't go.
I didn't chicken out. I just done told you I ain't going.
That's chickening out.
No, it ain't. It's a fact, Jack.
So we're going to tell you about a little bit about that. All right, this week's story. It's actually 2 stories. One's a little bigger than the other one. They're from the state of Maine, which we've done very little from Maine, so that's mm-hmm. kind of cool. Both are supposed to be curses, and I think you're going to love the backstory on both of them. So, here we go. Let's get started. On his first curse, I think you're going to listen to it and say, well, if ever a curse was deserved, this is one of them. Because sometimes people just, you know, hey, I'm just going to curse everybody because I feel like I got screwed.
Yeah.
And it's not always warranted. This one's kind of warranted, though. We've all heard of Bangor, Maine. Bangor, I barely knew her. What?
Oh, Jerry
Pauly. Anyways, we've all heard of Bangor, Maine.
Right at the beginning of the podcast, too.
Because that's where Stephen King, I think he lives in Bangor.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody kind of knows about that area. And he's kind of put Maine on the map because every story he does is somewhere in Maine.
Yeah.
About 19 miles south of Bangor is a little town called Bucksport. Bucksport has approximately 5,000 people living there, so it's a nice little quaint town. Its primary employer these days is a paper mill, but at one time this was a booming coastal town because it was, you know, right there on the near the ocean and all that stuff, so we got a lot of business from the ships and everything back in the day. The town was originally founded by Jonathan Buck, and he's going to be the focus of this curse. Locally, he became more famous after he died, even though he was pretty well known during the time because he was, like I said, he was one of these guys that had his hand in everything, including creating the town. So we'll get into a little bit more about what he accomplished a little later in the story. But the reason he's more famous and looked at now is because he's got this really nice, elaborate headstone. And that stone has a very distinguishing mark of a leg and a foot on it. And that is the actual curse.
Like engraved in it or like a 3D looking thing?
No, it's not really that. It's just kind of, now, it just kind of appeared on it, we'll say.
Oh.
And it really won't make much sense now, but as we get into the story, you'll see why that's the curse. There was also a second marking that appeared on the tombstone much later, and we'll tell you about that one too. So Jonathan Buck was a colonel in the Revolutionary War. He was a very well-respected person of a pillar of the community. Besides finding the town of Bucksport, he built the very first sawmill in town, as well as the first schooner that sailed out on the Penobscot River. On top of that, Bucksport was also the first successful settlement in the area. So there have been a bunch of settlements. None of them really took. Mm-hmm. This one did, though. Needless to say, he was kind of a big deal in the area, but as we've seen in the past through history, just because you're a big deal and well-respected doesn't mean you're the most scrupulous of people. He was having an affair with this lady. Her name was Ida Black. Obviously, you know, he was married, and this would have been a major deal to be having an affair with your wife. This was the late 1700s, so it was, you know, not something that would have been well-accepted by the community. Not for him or Ida Black. Now remember, these were the days where if a woman was an adulteress, they could be, you know, branded with a scarlet letter or something like that, just like the infamous book. He would have so much to lose in the community if they found out that he was an adulterer that this would put him in a very rough situation, mm-hmm. should anybody find out, as well as her, but mainly him. So wouldn't you know, one late night, he was leaving Ida Black's house, and somebody sees him walking away out in the area by her house, and they confronted him. So he's got a moral decision to make at this point. Does he say, oh, well, yep, I'm having an affair, and I was leaving her house?
Why couldn't he just said I went there for some ketchup?
Well, it was at one of those times of night where nobody would have been out looking for to borrow something. It was definitely something that, you know, in the late 1700s, I mean,
something you could only borrow at night.
In the late 1700s, if you're out at somebody's property, there was probably something bad going on. But anyways, instead of telling the truth, what he came up with on the spot was he thinks that maybe Ida Black is a witch.
Shut up.
So he was kind of doing some surveillance and kind of checking on some stuff. Well, this is about 100 years since the Salem witch trials and stuff had went on, and it was something that people still took very serious. So now the town believes that Ida Black might be a witch. Buck's forced with another moral dilemma. Does he now come clean, or does he let Ida take the fall and go to trial?
What a heifer.
Tracy, what do you think that he chose to do?
Well, being a he, I'm sure he let her take the fall.
They have a trial.
Oh, my gosh. He needs his pecker cut off.
And Ida's only defense would have been to say that she was having an affair with Jonathan Buck. Then she would have been branded as an adulteress, which in a small community really wouldn't have been much better. So she took her chances on getting past the trial of being a witch and just, you know, at least worst come to worst, she gets past it and people still think maybe she might be a witch, but eventually the stuff would go away. They had seen that happen in the past with people who'd beat witchcraft claims. The trial started. It was really quick, and the townspeople all convicted her of being a witch. She was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging. Among the people who showed up to witness the execution, Jonathan Buck and his wife. So Jonathan Buck was supposed to be like this really religious man, but as Ida begged for her life, he pretty much ignored her pleas. Right before Jonathan Buck walked away, Ida turns to him. She raised her hand and said, "Listen well, Jonathan Buck, for these shall be the last words that I shall speak. Soon you will die, and over your grave they will erect a large stone where everyone will see your bones crumbling into dust. And on that stone my leg shall appear, and all people near and far will know that you murdered an innocent woman." How about that for a curse?
Well, you know what? That's what he gets. That's what he gets.
Glad you feel so strongly about that.
I do feel that strongly.
So keep in mind, this was like a really heartfelt comment coming from Ida. But Jonathan Buck basically had a heart of stone, and he just turned and walked away.
I mean, did his wife not be like, "Dang, what she mean by that?"
Well, I mean, he was still in charge of the town, and if she was innocent, it didn't have to mean anything more than that. Well. So, seconds later, after he turned and walked away, they kicked the stool that was out from underneath of her, and she fell and died. So, what about the curse? It didn't really look like it was going to take place, because, you know, she said soon he was going to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't actually happen. He actually didn't die soon. As a matter of fact, he lived to be 76 years old.
No kidding.
Yeah.
She don't know what that soon means.
Yeah. He was a prominent member of the community all the way up to the time he died, and he was buried in the cemetery on Main Street. They did put a huge stone monument erected in his memory, much like she did say, but that would have been expected for somebody
of course.
His prominence. Within a few years, though, something strange happened. A stain appeared on the stone. A stain that looks a lot like a woman's leg and foot. And remember, her curse said her foot or her leg would appear on his stone. Many people started bringing up now this famous curse that she brought up. Because keep in mind, this is like 30-some years later.
I wonder if his wife is still alive.
I don't know. No idea. So people start bringing this up. The family brought in all kinds of experts to clean the stone. Every time they would clean it, it would come back. Nothing seemed to work. They even brought in some stonemasons, and they tried everything possible to remove it. Even doing some like sandblasting and stuff like that, it would always come back. So is there a logical explanation? It is granite, which is a porous material. So there is a lot of holes and stuff in there. And some think that it could just be iron ore deposits. And if that's the case, that it wouldn't be able to be cleaned. Most people, though, do think that it's the Buckport Witch, as she is known, Ida Black. And at night, many people actually claim to see the spirit of a woman believed to be Ida walking around the cemetery seeking out the grave of Jonathan Buck. There's a resident that lived right across the street from the cemetery. He says that he saw something very strange one evening when he was getting ready for bed. He said he was looking out the window towards the cemetery when he noticed a strange haze that was in the form of a person that was floating above the cemetery straight toward Buck's grave.
Well, I mean, I kind of believe it to be true. Of all things, to be on it, it is a leg, and that's what she said.
Yeah.
I mean, how does a leg disappear?
Right, and I'll post some pictures so you can see what this looks like. But most times, Ida's ghost is seen wandering around the cemetery in the fall. I don't know why that is. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact date that she died, but maybe that's got something to do with it. So here's the question. Is Ida coming back to seek revenge on Jonathan Buck or because she possibly still loves him? Here's why I ask. If you remember early on in the story, I said that there were two marks that would appear on the headstone, one much later. Late in the 1950s and in the early 60s, a shape of a heart started to appear on the top of the monument.
Wow.
Some think that this is Ida still giving her heart to Jonathan Buck.
Don't be dumb, girl. Look what he did. Move on.
Other than that, the leg and the foot is, in a sense, like a scarlet letter that some people think that, you know, he will always, that mark will always be there to brand him as an adulterer.
Well, good.
So always the proof that if anybody looks at it, there you go. So what do you think about that?
It's pretty wild. I can't believe he threw her under the bus like that.
He did.
And that's just not right.
Or back then it would have been like a wagon.
You know, today people can do that, and they do, but you don't go out and they don't go out and get you hung.
That's true. Yeah, you just lie today, people were just like, oh, well.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, you want to feel bad for her. I mean, it takes two to tango, but he did not. I don't think that she would have done that to him. I just don't. Well, if the tables were turned.
That's why a lot of people think that her spirit could be coming back because of love.
Nah, and I don't believe that heart up there,
you know, it's like some people have said that's their way of showing that that's her broken heart.
But or maybe he didn't have a heart, so she thought she'd stick one on his tombstone.
Possible so. But it's got to take something for her to stand there and not at least say during the trial, hey, we were having an affair.
I would have thrown it all up out there, right when I was getting ready to drop the bucket.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe she had it that bad for him where she was willing to die for him. But she did leave a curse, so she couldn't have been that happy.
Yeah.
All right, I have a second story. Now, this one's a bunch, but it's smaller, but it's a really cool story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a cursed farm in Freeport, Maine. And the legend goes that in the early 1800s, a gentleman by the name of Thomas Grayson owned a farm by the name of the Tuttle Farm. So he marries this woman by the name of Hattie. Now, Grayson at the time had a son named David, and his wife Hattie already had a son by the name of Jonah when they met. So they lived together as a family for several years. Unfortunately, Grayson became ill. So he went to his wife Hattie and said, look, here's the situation. I want to make sure that this farm goes to my son. When it's all said and done, he didn't believe in lawyers, didn't trust them. So there was no professional will made. He trusted his wife. So unfortunately, after Thomas Grayson passes away, she prepares to give the farm to her son.
She didn't listen.
She didn't listen or didn't care. So his son, David, was pissed about the whole situation and he leaves town. He just leaves them two in the farm and have it on your own. 14 years after Thomas died, Hattie goes out to the barn, and she notices that there is a patch of sand, about the size of a saucer, not very big. A couple of weeks later, it's a mound of sand.
Okay, where is that again? Where's the sand at?
Out by the barn.
Oh, out by the barn, not in the barn. Okay.
No, not in the barn.
Well, that's weird.
Then, within a month, it's a dune, a whole sand dune on this farm.
Well, how is that even possible?
Well, it's a good question. By the end of the decade, the whole farm was nothing but sand. Like, literally, I'm not saying like you walk out there and it looks like that the ground looks normal, but it's just like really sandy when you dig in it. I'm talking about picture being on a beach or picture being on a desert. This was in the middle of a farm, a 300-acre farm. So think about this, a 300-acre farm that now is like a giant golf sand trap in the middle of nothing but beautiful, fertile trees and grass all around you. It's not near the coastline to where it's like, oh, well, it's just real. It's none of that. This is in the middle of lush green acreage all the way around you. But now your farm has turned completely into sand.
That's a neat trick.
So Hattie eventually died, they said, from exhaustion. And her son Jonah stayed and eventually passed away himself, a lot older. But the farm was virtually a desert. And it never was anything that they could make money out of again.
I mean, didn't the people around the area wonder what the heck is happening?
Of course they did. So that's the story of the curse. Now the question is, Tracy, do you think that's a true story?
I don't see how it could be possible.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
You don't grow sand.
I'm going to tell you how it's possible. There is a desert in Freeport, Maine. And that's what they call it. Maine's desert. There's very little evidence to support that anybody named Grayson ever existed, let alone a curse or anything like that. What we do know, though, is there's some historical records show that the farm was owned by the Tuttle family. So we do know that. But apparently, they had really poor farming techniques. They did not. Here's what was said. They were potato farmers, and they had sheep as livestock. And they didn't rotate their crops like you're supposed to. And they let the sheep overgraze out there on the property. So what happened was the topsoil began to erode, and it eventually exposed a glacial desert that was beneath the topsoil.
Man, that's so crazy.
And a guy named Henry Goldrup bought it back in 1919 for $300.
$300?
He tried to make a financial success out of it by using the sand to make concrete and glass and stuff like that. After he owned it for 6 years, he turned it into a tourist attraction, and it is still a tourist attraction today. As a matter of fact, new owners, now the people who did own it, they eventually bought a camel and put out there, but the camel apparently wasn't real people friendly,
yeah.
So they had to get rid of it, and now they just got some statues and stuff out there of a camel. But the people who did own it, they had a big fence that went all the way around it. So it's like you had to pay admission to get in and see it, or you couldn't see it. You know what I mean? If you fly over it, like right now, it literally, you got all these giant trees growing up and nothing but sand. It's just the most incredible looking thing ever. But yeah, supposedly that whole area up there were glaciers back in the Ice Age. And because of that, there's all this. They said this, it's so fine, it's even thinner than sand.
That's crazy.
But they said for whatever reason, there was this sand, and then there was the soil and stuff over top of it. And once the soil was done bad, it gave way. And now it's pretty much overtaken it all. But the people who own it now, they're trying to make it into like an arts and craft type thing. And they've made it to where if you live in the area, it's completely free to get into. No admission price. And they're like going to have a bunch of art events and stuff like that up there. But they've taken down all the fences now, so everybody can see it for
what
it is. That's
pretty cool. Well, that's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, but I would advise anybody to look up the desert of Maine and look at the pictures of this. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, not really a curse. That's the story that went along with it. Because that would make sense if something like that happened.
Who'd have thunk
like
it?
A curse. But the reality of it is, it's just a freak of nature.
Freaky.
So, all right, Tracy, we're going to take a quick break from our sponsor, and then we're going to come back and talk Patreon, and we'll talk Gates of Hell, and we'll have Nick on from Ohio.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, Tracy, so we went to the Gates of Hell Cemetery. It was myself, my son Austin, his wife Kelly, and my sister Becky. I tried to get you to go. You refused. Something about demons or something.
Went in the mood. No demons.
I almost brought something back with me, but I knew
you would better have, not
I,
have.
I knew you would have thrown a fit.
What is wrong with you, Jerry?
So anyway, we get there. And this is kind of funny. Like, we had the GPS on telling us how to get there. And it says, when we got to one part, it says, prepare to park and walk to your destination, which was 30 minutes, a 30-minute walk. And the reason it tells you that is because the road, St. John's Road in Elizabethtown, it ends, there's a church, which is where we parked at, and then there is a farm. I can't remember the name of the farm, but it has a huge sign up that says no authorized vehicles, signs saying you're being watched and all that. So we didn't drive back there.
Well, that'd have been enough for me to turn around and go, that you're being watched.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
So Even though I know what it means.
So we parked and we walked back there, and it was a nice day yesterday, so no big deal. And, we were all talking, keeping each other company, but this is just like nothing but farms on both sides of you and this little gravel road going back there. And so we get back there and we get to the cemetery and there's two cars parked there and people out. And they were like, I told you we could have probably drove back here, which turns out we could have. That's just, I guess, just to keep the traffic down. But yeah. I figure most people like us won't do it. And, but we get back there and man, this place is so sad. I mean, it almost... I would say half of the headstones have been broken. Of course, there's lots of children back there.
Yeah.
As far as the headstones. And, people go back there and there's all kinds of toys and gifts and stuff left back there. I didn't get any kind of weird feelings or anything like that. Of course, it was daytime. But overall, I'm glad we went. We got to, look around a little bit and took a bunch of good pictures and stuff. And I put them up in the group and on our Instagram page. So if you're not following us on Instagram, Hillbilly Horror Stories, follow us. Mm-hmm. We put some cool stuff up there. But overall, I mean, all four of us came away with a good positive feedback on it. And with those cows were the creepiest.
That's just what I was getting ready to say. Those cows were creepy.
So there's two sets of cows. When you're walking up, there was a set of cows on the right-hand side, and then further up, there's a set on the left-hand. The ones on the left-hand didn't pay us any attention going up or coming back. But the ones on the right-hand side going up, which is literally 5 minutes into your walk, so they're pretty close to the beginning. As soon as they seen us, there was probably 30 cows, I guess. They all ran up to the gate. And then they just looked at us. I mean, all of them at one time just fixed on us. And then they all just started mooing and stuff.
They're probably pissed off that they have to be there.
And then as we walked, they followed us. I mean, they had a stretch of, you know, probably, I don't know, about a block long, I would say, of where they could travel alongside us. And they followed us all the way up. And then when we came back, same thing. But the other cows never paid us attention. And they were close to the fence, too. They just didn't care. But these cows, I mean, they just...
That freaked me out. Just
and I put a video up on, I don't know if I put it, on Instagram, I think. But I know I put it on the Facebook group of these cows just staring at us and mooing and all that. So it's kind of freaky. But other than that, it was just a cool trip.
Okay. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
But Gatlinburg, we had fun there. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, we saw a couple of shows. And we ran into a young lady. This is so funny. She was our server when we were at the steakhouse, the one where Tracy got sick at. And she was super nice, and she kept telling Tracy she had, what'd she say?
Happy hair.
Was it fun hair? Happy hair. And she kept telling her she had happy hair. Super sweet. She was a sweetheart. And then we go to the show the next night, and it was like legendary performers, and they had somebody doing Buddy Holly and Elvis and Cher. And they had Aretha Franklin and all that. Well, we see she's outside in the parking lot. She's like, she yells at Tracy, "Hey, happy hair." And so we're talking to her a little bit. And I thought she was there just to watch the show. And it turns out she was actually the performer that was doing Aretha Franklin. Mm-hmm. And my goodness.
Yes. If y'all get to go and see, or if, no, let me try that again. If y'all go and try to see a show, you need to see her. Make sure she's on that night.
Oh, my goodness.
She puts her heart and soul into every bit of it. She's got a beautiful voice. And she, like we said, she was the sweetest person. And then she saw me out in the audience while she was performing. And I guess about the end of it, she goes, "Hey, happy hair," or something like that. And then she got like all walked on the stage. But she was, I mean, it was fun. She was the best one there, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so, too. She was fantastic.
But, yeah, if y'all ever get up that way and want to see a good show, go see her, because she's awesome.
We still have a handful of tickets left for Bobby Mackey. I think there's less than 10 now. Mm-hmm. And that's the 25th, so, I mean, that's going to be here before
Yay!
You know it.
I'm so excited.
That one will definitely sell out. Like I said, there's plenty of room for social distancing in there, so that's not going to be a big deal. So excited for that one. So snag your tickets for that one. I'm hoping to have copies of the book by then. I spoke to the gentleman tonight. We were pushing for him getting me what I needed by the 12th. And he thinks that might be a little bit sooner. But everything is progressing nicely. So hopefully the book will be published. And I'll actually have copies in hand by then. So there's an update on the book for you real quick. We are having a sale in our store. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. So tomorrow and the next 2 days. Hillbilly 25. Anything you order, Hillbilly 25 will get you 25% off anything in the store. So you guys can get you some hoodies and stuff now that it's getting
cooler. That's a great outside. Idea.
And then if you want to wear something to the show or something like that, or something for Halloween. But anyway, Hillbilly 25, the next 3 days, will get you a discount. Don't order tonight if you listen, because it won't be there yet. But tomorrow, mm-hmm. we're good.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Tracy, what do you got for us iTunes-wise? And
We have Coretta Picasso. What a name. Nice. I love it. And our old faithful Mojo Lobster. Thank you, mm-hmm. sweetheart. We look forward to seeing your review every week. And TJ Roar. Is that Roar?
I think so.
Yeah. TJ Roar. Thank you guys for your reviews. They were amazing. And it always lifts us up and makes us happy. So.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep them coming, please.
When we were coming back, we were listening to some podcasts, 3.5 hour drive to and from. One of the ones that we found that we listened to for a big chunk of coming back was the Occult and Crime Academy. You guys want to listen to that one. It'll be fun because John and Jessica did a fantastic job of keeping us entertained.
Yeah,
on the way
it was
out.
Really
so
good. Very, very
give them
good.
A listen. I promise you'll like them. So a little bit of everything. You get a little bit of true crime. You get a little bit of paranormal, but it's a mixture of some stuff. Mm-hmm. So
very cool.
All right, are we ready to listen to the delicious Nicolicious? That sounds so dirty every time I think of it.
But it's so hot though.
Yeah, sure it is. But anyways, listen to this. Like I said, this one's not really for the kids, but for the most part, Nick was on his best behavior. So you're going to hear he was way more subdued than you were used to hearing. I told him he sounded like he was one of these radio announcers for like, hey, late in the evening, this is WKLT. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it came across. But you guys are going to love these stories. Like I said, stick around to the end because they just keep getting better and better. Hey, guys, I've got an old friend of the show that never makes time for us anymore, but I conned him into coming on. We've got Nick from the Brohio podcast. Nick, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Jerry. It's a beautiful Sunday. It's actually, tomorrow's my birthday, so this is kind of like my birthday present to myself, hanging out with you for a little bit.
Well, that's a much better birthday present than you gave me, which was a month ago, but that's okay. I can deal with that. Happy birthday. I didn't realize tomorrow was your birthday.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, 33. 30s are hitting me hard, man. I hate it. Every day I get older into my 30s, I freaking loathe every second of it.
I don't think anybody expected you to not be able to curse. That's just part of your DNA.
Well, I meant to ask you that before we started. I said, Jerry, who are we talking to? Is this for hillbilly kids? Is this for hillbilly preteens? Is this for hillbilly teenagers? Is this for hillbilly millennials? Or is this the actual Hillbilly Horror Story show? I wasn't sure.
One time, I think we did have all those shows, so understandable. Okay. So, Nick, you used to work in a prison. And you've got some stories that from your prison days. Well, I'm sure you have plenty of stories for your prison days.
Yeah.
But we're going to stick to some ghost stories from your prison days.
It depends on what route you want to go there. But yeah, my life is my professional life has taken me in many different directions for I mean, I started a police department when I was 18. And I worked there for almost 5 years. And then I got laid off because that was like when the housing market and all that stuff collapsed. And while I was laid off, I took a job working private security under the table. And that was probably the worst. That's where I learned a lot of life skills doing that shit, working these bootleg clubs. And it was some really sketchy situations, let me tell you, buddy, because they would put me in spots where I shouldn't be, where someone, you know, just for lack of a better word, I kind of stuck out like a sore thumb.
And I gotcha.
I needed a job, man, so I took the job at the prison. And it was a state-ran facility. It was a maximum security facility. It was the most, I think I heard at one point, it had the most amount of natural life sentences under one roof on this side of the United States. So there were a lot of guys in that facility that were doing natural life sentences, you know, like no chance of ever getting out type deals. Mm-hmm. And every day was a major commotion, whether it was someone getting stabbed or a huge gang fight, someone committing suicide. There was just always something, multiple times every day, something horrible going on. And it was kind of a just never-ended, man. It was tough not to bring that stuff home. But it was, I think the prison was right around 100 years old, a little less than 100 years old. So there was a lot of history in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it wasn't, I got a few different stories, and I hope that and it's kind of the same thing now, where a lot of these prisons are just so short staffed that these guys are getting stretched out over long hours. And in one of these stories, you know, it was one of those situations where I was kind of just stuck there for a super long time. I don't think it was my mind playing tricks on me, but actually I know it wasn't my mind playing tricks on me. So I know how much you hated your time in prison, Jerry. So I know this episode probably might be a little hard for you.
Traumatizing.
Having some flashbacks. But you know, man, if you we'll make our safe word banana. If you start screaming banana, I'll stop telling the stories. Okay.
Can we pick a different safe word?
No. What's your real life? What's your real life safe word? Wake up.
Don't stop.
Don't stop. Oh, I don't. Yeah, we just keep a knife next to the bed. We don't use a safe word at all. So that's kind of how we roll around here. Okay. Well, I'll start with my very first experience and this is the one where I was kind of like, you know, maybe my mind was playing tricks on me, but the more I think about it, the more I just, there's no way. One of the deals is when you first start out, you're on probation. You don't have any union protection, and you really don't have much to say for yourself. You just got to do what they want you to do and keep your mouth shut. And they have a process called being frozen, where if you're working a shift and the next shift after you is substantially understaffed, they can freeze you. That's where they just call you over the phone. They say, hey, you're frozen for the next shift. So essentially your 8-hour shift just got turned into a 16-hour shift, which I think is kind of fucking bullshit. In my personal opinion, they can stretch you out for 16 hours, but that's what happened that evening. And one of the, I don't know, there's a lot of different posts in the prison. You know, it was a stereotypical maximum security prison. There was towers around the outside. There was patrol cars that drove around the exterior fence to make sure no one was climbing the fence. But whenever you got assigned to overtime, you got first dibs to pick where you wanted to work as far as where they needed staffing. And that I knew that specific night there weren't many good spots to be had. And one of the spots that was available was a really small isolation unit, and some people will call it the hole, which, you know, anytime you get in certain kind of trouble in prison, they send you to the hole, which is where you're locked up in a cell 23 hours a day. For 1 hour a day, they'll take you out into another cell outside, and you get to play with a tennis ball or do sit-ups for an hour, and then they take you back inside and put you in your cell. And the place that they put me was called L2, and that was they used letters to assign the cell blocks because the prison had, I think, 12 or 13 different cell blocks. So there was like one main hallway, and then each cell block just branched off of that main hallway. And it's much like, it's kind of built in the same mold as Ohio State Reformatory. I think you've probably been there before, haven't you?
Yep.
Okay. Much in the same mold as that, how the cell blocks are. Kind of like Alcatraz, the same old style cell blocks. But this one, this specific block was kind of different in the aspect that it was in kind of like a basement style setting. It wasn't a normal cell. It was a really small enclosed area. It was about 70, the block itself was about 70, I don't know, 70 or 80 feet long, and it had about 25 cells in it. And it didn't have any lighting. It was super dark. All the lights were burned out. It was just made for a really kind of creepy setting to begin with, so it wasn't a super desirable spot. But what I was thinking when I picked that spot was I could get some Z's between my rounds, honestly.
I knew that's what you were thinking.
Take a fucking nap, yeah. Because I knew, I wasn't going to be able to make it through the night staying away, because this was like the fourth night in a row that I had been frozen over for overtime. So I picked that spot, and it was probably about 3 o'clock in the morning. And the way it goes, you do rounds every 30 minutes. It's staggered intervals. And this specific cell block, there was a giant iron desk that the officer is supposed to stand at. And there was like a bar stool attached to it that would swing out. And everything in the prison is made by the inmates. So the guys in the machine shop probably made that 50 or 60 years ago. But then on the ground, kind of sitting next to the giant iron desk, was just an old office-style chair, kind of a foam office chair. Mm-hmm. And I would make my rounds, and then I would just sit down in the chair. And when you would make your rounds, you just go around, look in the window, make sure all the inmates are in their cells, sleeping. It's the middle of the night. There's nothing. They're either, they're supposed to be sleeping, but sometimes they're doing other stuff. And we'll save that for the Brohio podcast. We won't talk about that on your show, Jerry.
Well, yeah, that's where the prisoners don't feel the need to get stretched out either.
Yeah, they just fucking, yeah, they really have some hard sex. But they always said, as long as you keep your socks on, it doesn't matter what you do. So that was kind of their, that was what they would always say. And you would make your rounds, and you would look through the windows, make sure they're sleeping, make sure no one's chiseling into the wall, doing something like that. And I made my rounds all night, and I remember I had a Hobbit book in my back, because it was when I was on when I would do these third shift overtimes, I would try and pack a classic book to try and read. There was a lot of classic books I would try and get through, and this is one of the Hobbit books, and I was just getting tired of it, man. I put it down in my lunch bag, and I sat down in that little office chair, and I propped my feet up on kind of like that swinging out bar stool that was on that giant desk, and I leaned my head back, and I I knew it wasn't a sleep. You know that kind of that phase in between falling asleep and falling asleep where a baseball flies at your face and you jump out of the bed, or someone tries to punch you and you jump up in the air. I think everybody experiences that shit. On this night, I propped my feet up on that bar stool, and I remember I was thinking to myself, there's no way I'm going to be able to fall asleep tonight. My mind was racing. I was making shit money. I didn't have any money. I was stressed out. And I'm just thinking about everything, because that's what you do anytime you're locked up in a maximum security prison for going on 13 or 14 hours. And all of a sudden, I feel like I do this to my kids whenever they're not paying attention. I'll take my hand and I'll raise it up in the air and I'll like grab them on the knee really hard and start tickling them. Well, imagine that. Multiply it by a million. I had my eyes closed and I could hear the whoo, like something brush past me, and it felt like 15 uncles grabbed my knee and started squeezing. I felt it slap my leg, and I felt it grip my knee, like it was trying to, you know, tickle me above my knee. And it, whenever the scariest part for me is at first, I thought it was an inmate that had just ran up and grabbed me. That's what the kind of force that I felt when this whatever it was grabbed my leg. And I tried to roll away from it and kind of like push myself up to my feet at the same time. Well, when I went to push myself up onto my feet, I could feel whatever it was like restricting me. It was holding me. Something was restricting me down. I couldn't lift my leg. And for just a fraction of a second, you know, maybe a full second or two, it was like someone was, if you had your legs flat on the ground and someone laid on your legs, you wouldn't be able to lift your legs up off the ground. That's what it felt like. I couldn't lift my leg. It's like it was restricted and held down. But when I opened my eyes, there was nothing around. There was no cell doors open. It's really strict operating procedures at night. There is absolutely no one out of their cell. If a door is open, there's an alarm that goes off. These guys are not out of their cells. And there's no one around. There's no officers around. In order for another person to even come into that cell block, I would have to actually stand up, put my key in the gate behind me, and open the gate and let the officer in. So there's nobody else around. So whatever. And I was thinking afterwards that maybe I fell asleep and my leg fell asleep and I just... It was intensified for some strange reason that night. But the thing that I can't get past is it felt like it was laying across my legs. It had it so restricted I couldn't lift my leg up off of the bench at all. So it was kind of it definitely made me shit my pants. Not for a split second there, I was kind of just out of my mind, honestly. And that was... That was kind of the first time that I had anything really sketchy happen to me. And when I say that was that wasn't even the most intense of shit that as far as the paranormal experiences that I had there. Have you ever dealt with, like, you personally, have you dealt with shadow people before whenever you're sleeping?
No, I know. And it was funny because as you've mentioned that, the story, the first thing I thought of was maybe it was like an episode of sleep paralysis or something, or at least a partial.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of times that comes with the shadow people.
But I did like a crocodile death roll, man. There was the only thing that was held down was what whatever slapped me on the leg and grabbed me, held me down. And my whole entire rest of my body, I was able to move away from it, except for my leg and it felt like a hand, almost like a hand wrapping around your thigh is exactly what it felt like. But that was my first experience, and I didn't quit that night. I manned up. I went home and my wife
curled into a fetal position.
She said, "How was work?" I said, "It was fucking terrible," and she didn't want me to elaborate because she knew every single night was terrible there. And,
I bet.
Yeah, but then another kind of profound experience I had there, I had three stories for you, but there was another night that there was a similar situation in another cell block, and when I leaned my head back to go to sleep, I told you about, if there was any other officers that would have been in there, I would have had to have stood up and unlocked the gate for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to even get to that gate, there's a huge hydraulic-powered door that Central Control has to open. Central Control will open the door, then the officer will step in the little vestibule-type lobby for the cell block, and then you let him in through the gate. Well, I was in another cell block working overtime, and I had my head leaned back against that gate. They call it a crash gate. And I was kind of half dozing off that night as well, and it felt like someone walked up behind me and just went right in my ear, man. I could feel the air blow, like the hot air blow on my neck, and I could feel it in my ear. And that was another night that I had, and that was kind of another night where I said, you know what? Is that just me not knowing how to fall asleep like an idiot? It's just like my mind playing tricks. Because, you know, you're stretched out. Your brain is just mush because you've been yelling at these guys all day long, and then you have to go work this other shift. And that was a... And that story just came to mind as you and I were discussing this first one. But on to these next two that were pretty these next two are pretty intense. I'll save the best for last. But on this next one, I was actually assigned to third shift. I moved to third shift because it just worked better for my family and I. And I was in another isolation block called R block, and this one was two stories high instead of one story. And like I said before, you make these rounds at 30, you make the rounds at 30 minute intervals, and you have a thing on your duty belt called a spider alarm. And they could be called something else at other institutions, but at our specific institution, it was called a spider alarm. And part of these spider alarms, if you ever got into an altercation with an inmate and you needed assistance, they had a little plug on these spider alarms. They're about the size of an old Nokia cell phone. And you could pull the plug on these spider alarms, and when you pull that plug, it alerts the central control, and they say, "Attention, all listening units, officer, whoever needs assistance." Like it's like it's a man down alarm essentially, and everybody comes running, just ready to beat the shit out of somebody. It's really poetic. And they also have two buttons at the bottom of these spider alarms, so you can either pull the plug when you need help, or you can take, there's two different buttons, and if you push those two different buttons at the same time, that sends out the same alarm as the plug. But they have these little sensors set up all over the prison, and when you walk by the sensors, if you push only one button on your spider alarm, it tells that specific sensor that you are there. And since they're spaced out all over the prison, that was one way for them to track you and that you were doing your rounds properly. Because if you just write down your logbook like, "Hey, I made my rounds," no one's going to believe you. But since they put up these little sensors, you can walk around and trigger them. And it leaves a time stamp that you were in that specific part of the building at that time. So it's kind of a way to make sure that you're doing your job. And if you hit the sensors too early, they're really, really strict about making sure you do your rounds at 30 minute staggered intervals. So if you wait too long or if you go too soon, then it messes up your entire rotation. So you want to, you know, hit those alarms at 28 minutes, then at 29 minutes, then at 27 minutes. And I was making my rounds in R block, which is another lockdown, it's the hole or isolation. And I was on the top story, what they call it a range. Because when you walk into a cell block, it's just a giant rectangle building, and then all along the outsides of the wall are the cells. And then there's like a walkway that almost like a balcony that runs the entire perimeter of the cell block. And you walk around these balconies, and that's how you look in the cells. And I was at the very back of the cell block on the second story, and I was waiting for my watch to get to 29 minutes so I could hit that... So I could hit the spider alarm to notify the nearby sensor that I was making my rounds. So I'm like 4 minutes early, so I have to stand by this stupid sensor for like 4 minutes and wait. And I'm
overachiever.
Yeah, just, you know, doing my part. I wasn't always sleeping, Jerry. Sometimes I was doing what I was supposed to do. And I'm sitting there looking at my watch, and I look up at about, I don't know, four cells down the range, so about four cells away from me. I see this white guy up in his window of his cell, and he's just staring at me. He's staring a hole right through me. And I look down my watch, and kind of turn around. I'm kind of impatiently waiting, and I look up again, and this guy is still looking out of his cell window, just staring at me. And normally everyone is asleep in the middle of the night, and there was no one would ever look out of their windows. And one of the biggest things in this prison is your reputation is built on kind of respect. So you have to make the inmates respect you. And if they, if you feel like they're disrespecting you, it's up to you to show the inmate, like, hey, you can't disrespect me, or else there's going to be consequences. And that's kind of how you build a reputation of being firm and someone. You just want to be someone that the inmates don't fuck with. Honestly, that's kind of what the you're trying to build. And I start to think to myself, this dude is just staring at me. As soon as I hit this alarm, this timestamp, I'm going to walk over here and I'm going to ask him what his problem is. I'm going to, you know, go over there and see what the fuck he's staring at. And I had it all planned out in my mind. I was going to be like, hey, dumbass, what are you doing? You know, I was going to bark at him. And then finally, about 20 seconds before I was supposed to hit this alarm, I look over again and sure as shit, man, he's still just me mugging me. He's got this mean scowl on his face, clear as day, all the way, like face completely pressed up against the window. And there was an exit light right above him that kind of illuminated the front of his cell. So I could see his face clear as day. And I turned around and I kind of pulled my spider alarm up towards the sensor and I hit the button. And when I turned back around, he was out of the window. So I thought to myself, this dude got scared and he knows I'm going to come over there and check the shit out of him. And mind you, this was a white guy with his face pressed up against the window. What, you had a white bald head. I don't think it was you, but you had a white bald head and a very mean scowl on his face. So I walk over to the cell and I look in the window, and they would hang sheets above their windows to kind of keep the outside lights from keeping them awake, because they have super bright lights outside the prison. And when I looked into the cell, it was completely dark. They had their lights off, and there was two bunks in the cell, and you can see, and these cells are like 5x7. They're insanely small cells,
right?
And I look in the window, and there's a guy on the top bunk and there's a guy on the bottom bunk, and both of them have, they're not sleeping with sheets because it's like 1,000 degrees outside. These guys were both black. They're both black guys. There was no white guy in the cell at all. When I say they were black guys, there was no mistaking the color of their skin. And I was so shaken by this. I said, there's no way. I went to the cell next to him, and it was always common practice to keep the cells next to, they would try and keep the cells, they kind of stagger them and keep empty cells between people. The cell to the left of them was completely empty, and the cell to the right of them was completely empty. And the guy looking out the window at me was completely white, bald head, and these two guys were sound asleep in the cell, and they were both black. And I went down to the roster at the front of the cell block to check to make sure that the guys in the cell were the ones who were supposed to be there, and they have their picture next to the roster. And sure as shit, man, these were the two guys that were supposed to be in there, and there hadn't been a white guy. And these two had been in that cell together for 3 months, and there hadn't been a white guy in that cell in over 3 months. So whomever or whatever was looking out at me that night definitely rattled my chain, man. It was a really creepy experience for sure. And I was wide awake that night. I was not falling asleep. I wasn't losing my mind. That was for me, that was one of the most clear cases of something crazy happening like that that I could ever experience.
And you got a bunch of good looks at it because you looked up numerous different times.
Yeah, I mean, I kept
so
on looking.
It wasn't a one-time thing.
I kept on looking like, this fucking guy is trying to, what? Why is he staring at me? Like, what have, and like I said before, it's all about respect, man. It's all about checking these guys when they're wrong or when they're trying to, you feel like they're trying to alpha dog you, going up to them and say, hey, what's your problem, dipshit? And I don't believe in that culture now. I've kind of changed a little bit, but that's kind of how it worked there. But he was I can't mistake what I saw that night for sure.
And you said that's not even the worst one, so I'm excited to hear this one.
No, this this one's fucking weird, dude. Okay, this specific night, I was coming back from Disney. I was on vacation with my family, and this was my first night back on third shift. I didn't want to be there, and this was another night that I was not working overtime. This was another assigned regular day on third shift, and I was in one of the general population blocks. And what's different about the general population blocks is they're a cell block, but they're three stories tall. And when you walk into the cell block, on the left is a staircase that gets you up to the third floor, and then on the right is a staircase that gets you up to the top floor. And then you have 50 cells on the right side and 50 cells on the left side. And this place is just chocked full of people, man, honestly. And on midnight shift, you have to count these guys. I think it's four different times. So you have to go through and count them, make sure no one's climbed out of their window. You have to make sure there's a living, breathing body in the cell. And that's part of that's the main duty of the night crew is to count these guys and make sure there's not essentially an escape trying to go on. That night, I was assigned to G block, which is one of the biggest cell blocks in the building. It's a huge, huge cell block. And I had been making my rounds all night, and inmates are not allowed out on the night shift because we go to a skeleton crew. It would be way too easy. It would be entirely too easy for them to overpower all of us because essentially we're working with maybe less than a quarter of what a fully staffed day would be like when the inmates are out, you know, doing their thing. So nighttime, they're completely locked down. They're not allowed out of their cells. It's just our job to count them and make sure they're not killing themselves, essentially.
Fair enough.
That night, I'm doing everything as planned. I'm doing a crossword puzzle, trying not to lose my mind. And I would always, I would stand up to do my rounds. And like I said, at the beginning of this incident, there's a staircase on the left and a staircase on the right. And these staircases are much like staircases you would see in a movie where maybe a cop is chasing a bad guy down 15 flights of stairs, and the cop, you know, kind of looks over the edge and he can see the bad guy down three or four stories on the steps below him. That's kind of how these steps are. So when I go to the bottom of the steps and I look up, I can see all the way to the entrance to the third story. And it was always common practice for me because it was the only place in the facility there were no cameras. When I would enter a stairwell, I would take a really good look around because I would want to make sure one of these guys wasn't lurking around the corner waiting to hurt me, essentially. We had one guy that was an officer that was climbing the steps, and he wasn't really paying attention. And an inmate took a laundry bag and put about 25 full cans of Pepsi in it and swung the laundry bag and just completely annihilated this officer. I mean, just broke a bunch of bones in his face. It really fucked him up.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it was always common practice for me to kind of check the steps, look around, just be cognizant of my surroundings, which I encourage my fucking kids to do right now. I say, look around before you do shit, because kids will walk into a volcano because they're so unaware of what's going around. So I encourage everyone, just look around, assess your surroundings. That's one thing I always preach. But this night, I go into the stairwell, and I look around the steps. I look straight up, and then when I look straight up the stairwell, I can see the railing, or the kind of where it the third story up top. There was a railing around the side, and I saw someone clear as day lean over the railing, have their hands on the railing, like leaning over the railing, looking down at me. I mean, it wasn't that high up. I mean, these cells are only probably 7 feet high. So to see from the bottom to the top is maybe 30 feet or a little more. And clear as day, I'm at the bottom and I'm looking up at the top, and I see a guy, you know, much like you would lean over a railing at the mall. Cause I know when I was a kid, I would, the mall, I would take French fries and I would lean over the balcony and I would try and drop French fries down women's cleavage that were sitting, like, you know, women that were kind of sitting out, kind of dressed, scantily clad. I would try and drop French fries in their cleavage. And that was That's a really fond memory I have with my grandpa, honestly.
Man, there's not a lot to do in Dayton, so I understand.
Yeah, no, there's not. We would do heroin after we left the mall. That's weird. So I look up, and I see this guy leaning over the railing. Mind you, an inmate being out at this time of night is a huge security breach to the point where we have to, you have to call for backup. You have to notify central control that you need any available person to respond and, you know, figure out where this guy came from, where he, who he is, where he belongs, if he's escaped or if he's trying to escape, what's going on. So I see this guy pull back. I'm staring up at him. And I see him pull back like he's gonna, like he's running, but there's nowhere to run. We're all locked in the same cell block. Right. There's nowhere to run. There's no windows, you know. And I'm thinking he's probably just somehow kept his door open and nobody knew it. But the thing about it is, when these doors close, it's like much like you. It's a 100-year-old prison. These are hydraulic doors, and you can't shut them quietly. They make a huge commotion, especially in the middle of the night when no one is making a sound. It's a sound that you can't avoid it whenever you shut these doors. So I get on my radio and I say, I need backup right now. I have an inmate that's out and I don't know where he went. So I start to run up the steps, and these other officers respond, probably seven or eight other officers, and we start running around the cell block, because I get up to the third story and I don't see this guy anywhere around. And I remember whenever he was leaning over the railing, I guess the top of his forehead, his hair was kind of hanging, you know, like gravity taking control. He's leaning over the, right. He's leaning over the railing. His hair is dangling. And it was almost like a salt and pepper. It looked kind of grayish, kind of blackish. I couldn't really tell because it's in the middle of the night, obviously, and it's kind of dark. And everyone's running around this cell block and they can't find anybody. So everyone just chalks it up to one of these guys got out and got back in a cell and shut the door, and I let it happen. So I was kind of on the shit list at this point.
Right.
And then the captain comes down, and this was the grumpiest fucking guy in the entire world. I hated this guy so much. He was such an asshole all the time. He said, "So you just let guys walk around this fucking place when they're supposed to be sleeping?" And I said, "No, I didn't. Absolutely, positively didn't let anybody out of their cell." And his, so at that point, he wanted to do a picture count. And a picture count is where they go to the main counting office, which is where they have every picture of every inmate in the prison in a binder. And they have them organized by cell number. So they got the binder for my specific block. And a picture count, you make both inmates stand up in the cell and you compare their face to their picture that they have, you know, hard written in the count office. And he wanted to do a picture count to make sure everyone was accounted for, to make sure no one was escaped, that no one was in the wrong cell, because that was another thing we had problems with, is at the end of the night, people would get in the wrong cell, and he wanted to do a picture count to make sure that we had everyone in the right spot. Well, part of the picture count was you have to wake all these fucking guys up and make them stand up, so obviously they're going to be pissed off. And you have to turn all the lights on in the middle of the night. Granted, this was probably 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I remember they were doing, they had two officers on each floor. And on the third floor where I saw the guy, they had this big, loud, obnoxious officer. And I remember whenever he got to, I'll never forget this sound. He got to the end of the cell block, the furthest end of the cell block from where I saw the guy over the railing. And he got on the radio and he said, "Holy shit, we got one swinging." And I'm like, "What the fuck is he talking about?" And everyone runs up there. They open the door of the cell. There's a guy that's hung himself at the back of his cell from his window. And he was dead as a doornail, dude. And God strike me fucking dead if this guy didn't have salt and pepper long bangs hanging down right in front of his face.
Ugh.
He was cold to the touch. So this guy had been dead for a while. He had, they said when they first, because I was on the other side of the cell block when they busted the door open. They said that the way he had they had like these cabinets in their cells, and the way he had it positioned, they couldn't tell that he was hanging. So whenever someone would count, you know, they wouldn't really be able to tell that he had hung himself. It wasn't until they made both inmates stand up that his cellmate said, you know, he's hanging there, he's dead. And it was hard for me to tell if you asked me for $1 million, if you would pay me $1 million, if I could describe what that guy looked like that peeked over the balcony at me, I couldn't do it because it was too dark and it was too far away and it was too fleeting of a moment for me to even get. All I remember is the long bangs in the front that was kind of salt and pepper colored hanging down. And this guy that they pulled out of there sure as shit had 5-6 inch salt and pepper bangs hanging off the front of his face. Honestly, I can't explain that. Whether maybe I didn't actually put my hands on him to say, hey, this guy is cold. For someone trying to debunk this, maybe that was the guy and he made it back to a cell and he hung himself, which we all would have heard that door shutting. I mean, it's a really loud commotion that those doors make. I didn't hear a door shut that night. I would have heard a door shut, and I would have been able to, as quickly as I got up those stairs, I would have seen him running down the balcony to get back into his cell, and I did not see that. And that's kind of, that was my most profound experience that I ever went through at the prison there.
So did anybody give any credence at all after that maybe that's what you saw, or that everybody just assumed you just let people run around?
No, they were fully convinced that. And here's the kicker, man. Actually, this is the best part. This kind of was towards the end of my career there, so it's kind of. I had a buddy call me. There was something like an inmate killing himself there. Not a big deal. It's just not a big deal in that investigation into that suicide probably got shuffled underneath of a million other cases. And a while after I left there, he called me. He said, you're not going to fucking believe. It was another officer on the same shift that just always a super good dude. We would always chat about really weird stuff. But he called me and said, you're not going to fucking believe me. They did the investigation of that suicide, and they went back and they watched the tape because there's video cameras that are closed, you know, surveillance that monitors the balconies there. And he said there was nobody out that night. There was nobody on that stairwell. The cameras aren't in the stairwell. He said there was nobody on the range or the long balcony. He said there was no one that ran down that balcony leading up to his suicide. The last person that was on the balcony were the inmates right before they got locked down for the night at 9 p.m.
Hmm.
So I kind of, the vibe that I got, I think I probably worked there another 2 or 3 months after that, but everyone just assumed that this guy was out, and that I let him get back in a cell and he killed himself in between us, I guess, whatever. And but the guy, the super over the top animated officer that found him, said, no, I just remember, he was cold to the touch. He's cold. And I think that the policy was you have to start doing CPR on these guys as soon as you find them. And I think the reason he was saying that he was cold to the touch is so it would
lessen
the likelihood of him having to put his mouth in this inmate's mouth. But, you know, I never touched the inmate. But, Jerry, I'm telling you right now, there's no way that someone could open, let alone close one of these doors without making a large, commotion, a loud, violent sound like that. So, especially someone running down the range, kind of, you know, in a dead sprint trying to get away from someone.
Well, I could see where that would freak you out. And all the experiences you had there, when you combine all of them, I could really see why you would have issues with that place, besides the obvious.
Yeah, and it's not just me. There were a lot of people there that had a lot of people that stories of them, you know, doing cell-to-cell checks and then just having some type of entity rushing up behind them, almost like knocking them flat on their face from behind. a lot of people shared a similar story like that. A lot of guys would, you know, always see stuff kind of peeking around the corner and stuff. I know one night, one of the preferred spots was the towers that surrounded the prison there. And the tower officer called in, he called inside. He said, "I've got five inmates that just walked into the tree line outside of the prison." So at this point, we're calling the state patrol. We're calling the central office in the state capitol. They checked these woods high and dry. They didn't find any inmates that walked into the woods. He couldn't be any more certain. He saw five inmates wearing white shirts and blue pants walk into the tree line. We counted 100 times right after that. There were no inmates missing from the inside. So that kind of just... and this was where he saw these inmates was right outside the rec yard. And there were a lot of inmates that just a lot of violence and deaths that happened on the rec yard out there. So that kind of like I would say that's kind of a dark spot, man. One thing I always talk about is energy. There's just a lot of bad energy there.
I don't think I've talked to a single person that has worked inside of a prison that didn't have some type of paranormal story.
Yeah, like I just said, it's just a bad place, man. And that specific prison I worked at, there was just a lot of people dying, a lot of people killing themselves, just a lot of bad juju, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in a place like that for sure.
Yeah. Well, buddy, I appreciate you coming on. Of course, you're from the Brohio podcast. And
yeah, don't tell anybody.
I would think most of our listeners probably already listen, or they've been offended and don't listen. But yeah, they've all at least given it a shot, I would think.
Right. And if you do come listen, just keep in mind that I kept it at about a 3 with Jerry just now. Normally, my co-host Rob Dog and I, we're completely off the hook, man. We're talking about poop in our pants and what we think vaginas look like. We're talking about all kinds of horrible, nasty stuff. So I know you got a lot of wholesome, pure listeners. So if they're not into the X-rated kind of nasty, disgusting, junior high humor, there's a lot of cool podcasts out there. Especially this one, Hillbilly Horror Stories, but we may not be the show for you if you're trying to be able to go to church on Sunday and feel good about it.
Absolutely not. But this is actually maybe the most subdued I've ever heard you. You at the beginning, I was thinking, man, Nick sounds like one of these DJs that hosts a radio station at night, and hey, you're listening to the Cool Magic 100 here, and that's the vibe I was getting from you.
If you could see me right now, I'm in my basement. I got all the lights off in the basement, and I got like an alien green strobe light lit up behind me. I've consumed no marijuana today. I'm not drunk. I was upstairs kind of... The kids have this bench that they... Or this little stool that they stand on to get on the pisser and get stuff down from the bathroom. My wife was on the phone, and I was standing on it, and I was doing yoga moves, just trying to take deep breaths, deep meditation. Dude, I don't know what the fuck I was doing. Well, I know what I was doing. My blood pressure's through the roof, and sometimes I just like to take a few deep breaths, and I was doing some yoga. So maybe it chilled me out, man. Maybe I need to try it more often.
Yeah, you're like that one teacher on Beavis and Butthead, the science teacher.
Yeah. So wearing some Jerusalem Cruiser sandals.
Right. All right, buddy. It was good having you on.
Well, real quick, man, I'm going on vacation to Pigeon Forge here in a couple weeks. What do you recommend me? Where should I take this beautiful family of mine?
Oh, man. There's 1,000 different things to do down there. We're actually going to be down there in 2 weeks.
October 2nd is when I'm going to be there.
That's when we're coming back.
Okay.
Believe it or not. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, well, everything family related down there, man. That's the good thing about Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg. Everything is family related. Well, there's a couple of shops in Gatlinburg that's popped up over the last 10 years that are hemp places and adult novelty stores, but those things didn't used to be there. But
yeah,
I mean, as far as there's 1,000 different types of putt-putt and whitewater rafting, which is it's a tough time of the year to do that. They'll
yeah,
still
fuck
do
that,
it, but
Jerry.
I'm
fat and out of shape. I'm not trying to die in the river with my kids watching.
But all kinds of go kart places. That's the cool stuff to do. And if your kids are up for it, they do a really good ghost tour in downtown Gatlinburg. It's a yeah. good little walk. It's not scary. It's, you know, a cool little thing. But if they're into that kind of thing, they actually do give a really good ghost tour down there.
Oh, they'd be fucking terrified. There's
and
no
the
way.
And the aquarium is the best. And the aquarium's actually voted the best aquarium in the country.
Okay. We're definitely going to check out the aquarium and the Pirate Theater deal. So.
Yeah, the Pirate Theater's cool. Dolly owns that.
Yeah. And, huge so tits.
It's just like the Dixie one that she's got, except it's a pirate theme. But, yeah, all the shows down there, man, you can't go wrong with any of them. All right, buddy.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate it.
All right, later.
Yep.
Well, Tracy, were those some creepy stories or what?
They were very creepy.
And you see what I mean about Nick being a little subdued as to what he knew?
He was. He was. that's not a bad thing. It was pretty nice. But, you know, we love our Nick, so.
All right, well, that's all we got for you this week. Don't forget, if you guys would like to advertise on Hillbilly Horror Stories, send me a message. I'll send you a price list out. So far, the people who have done it have had really good results, and they said that I can feel free to share those numbers with
good.
You if you want. So
that makes us happy.
So got stuff starting as cheap as $25 for advertising packages. So if you got like an Etsy account, or if you've got, I know some people got Scentsy accounts and all that stuff. Whatever you might be selling online. Or if you've got a podcast and you just want to try to get some more listeners, hit us up and I'll send you a price list. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Hope you all have a blessed week. We love you.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1. Download Rocket Money. Step 2. Link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3. Create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No